Each one of us is on a spiritual journey. And you never know what might be around the next corner. Shelley Fitzgerald is on a spiritual journey. And a little over a year ago, about a year and a quarter ago, she rounded the corner one day and encountered something completely unexpected that has turned her life upside down. She was serving as a mild-mannered school guidance counselor.
I was a guidance counselor.
Serving at Roncalli High School, a Catholic high school. She had deep roots in the Roncalli community, attended high school there, graduated, went off to get her higher education, came back to be a guidance counselor there, had served for 15 years in that capacity at Roncalli. And it wasn't for Shelley just a job. It was her passion. It was her calling. She saw it as ministry to the students. Then everything comes apart. When I asked Shelley if she would share her story with us today, she said, "I'd be more comfortable doing it in a conversational format." So that's what we're going to do today. Shelley, thank you so much for being part of this congregation, for sharing your story here today. For those who didn't hear last year what happened to you, tell us what happened.
Thanks. So first of all, the reason that I chose to do it this way is because if you're a person who comes to church here regularly, I'm just warning you, I'm not as eloquent as Jeff is. If this is your first time here, then I encourage you to come back, because he truly is the reason that I've come back time after time after time, because his message, yeah, thanks, yeah. I know the work that he puts into it, so I don't mean to slight him when I say that his message is something that we all should hear, because as I reference it sometimes, it's simple, stupid, you know? And I don't mean it in the way that that sounds. It just means it's like I walk out of here and I'm just like, yeah. And in the way, so I'm so blessed. I mean, so blessed to be here today, but, you know, to have crossed paths with Pastor Minor and the congregation. So back in August of 2018, I was, as Jeff said, I was a counselor. I was not mild-mannered, but I was a counselor at Roncalli High School, and we had just begun school the week before, and I had received an email from the president of my school, which kind of serves as the, over the principal, but over the financial piece of the school. The president had emailed me and asked me if he could meet with me and my principal the next day, for any of you who work in any kind of, under anybody really, and, you get an email that on Friday at 2:00, they would like to meet with you. Everybody's like, oh, yeah, that's what happened to me. So I got this email on Thursday. I immediately texted my principal and said, you know, what's up? I don't usually meet with them together. And certainly not at 2:00 on Friday. And he called me back a little bit later to let me know that someone had turned in my marriage certificate. And so, you know, a little bit of background is, as Jeff said, you know, I've been a part of that community since I was a little bitty. Grew up, have brothers and sisters and cousins and nieces and nephews that go to school there. My dad was an active volunteer, served as in the Christian Awakening Retreat Senior Program. Yeah, he's pretty incredible. And so I think that when I say that, you know, like I was a part of the community, I was about as much of a part of the community as you can be. And so I didn't know what this meant. I didn't know who turned in my marriage certificate. But here in the state of Indiana, and I wasn't aware of this until recently, is that you literally can look up someone's first and last name if you know their birth name. You can look up Michelle Fitzgerald, and you can find my marriage certificate. And if you want to turn that in to get me fired, apparently you can do that, and that's what happened. And so in that meeting on Friday afternoon, I was given four options. The actual first option that I was given was to dissolve my civil union, divorce my wife that I've been with for 23 years, to leave that family, to be counseled and accompanied back to the church, okay, by a priest. And the second option was then I could resign. And then after that, beyond that, my options were, you know, if you stay quiet, if this kind of stays under wraps, then we can let you work throughout the rest of the year as long as nothing comes out and, you know, potentially get to the end of the year and then not renew your contract. So any way you look at it, unless I divorce my wife and leave my family, which that day was a good day, so I didn't. if you'd ask, no, I'm just kidding. And so, you know, as these options were presented to me in my head, you know, of course I was like, wait, there's no option for me to stay except for this. And, you know, and so immediately I let them know without having a whole lot of time to think about it. You know, I absolutely am not going to divorce my wife and leave my family. I'm not going to resign from a job in a community that I love, and make people think that I walked away from it. And in regards to the quiet piece of it, you know, although I wasn't out to students and parents because I'm a counselor and that's not a part of what I do. I don't share, you know, my personal journey with other people just so that they can, you know who I am. But I was out to pretty much everybody else. You can't be in a community like that's as close-knit without everybody not only knowing who you are, but being an integral part of my life, hanging out with us. And, you know, my daughter, from the time that she was, you know, could walk, she was walking the halls of Roncalli. And so to be quiet, I didn't know exactly what that meant, but what it meant to me was, like, I'm going to tell people that I love what's going on. That's just going to be a part of it. What I didn't know that would happen next is when I walked back into my office and, you know, my coworkers, who first were my friends, not just my coworkers. We had a pretty special department. You know, everybody was devastated, and I emailed a few people. What I didn't know is that would eventually translate into 2 weeks later me being on the Ellen DeGeneres show. So to say that I didn't keep it quiet is probably an understatement. But it wasn't me. I mean, like, this is not comfortable for me. This is not, I mean, I've always been an advocate for my students. I've always been an advocate for, you know, for injustices to be, you know, overturned. I've always been an advocate, but I certainly have never been an activist. I don't like to be in the spotlight. I like to, you know, be the one that's lifting people up, not needing people to lift me up, which is what it turned into.
So after the initial meeting with the principal and the president of the school, what was the next shoe to drop?
Well, so on Sunday, I met on Friday. On Sunday afternoon, after it had already been on all the news, I was notified that I was placed on administrative leave, which is where I stayed for the remainder of the year, kind of not knowing what was going on, because there were immediately, along with being, you know, surrounded by my tribe, my people, there were a group of students, six, in fact, who stood up immediately and changed the trajectory of the entire story. They stood up, and not only did they say, you know, this isn't cool, but now we're going to fight to make it better. And so what they did the first Saturday or the first Friday after this happened, you know, they made it a rainbow football game, and it was all over the news. One of our football players who actually, I know Jeff, there's the picture, one of our football players who's actually on Shelley's Voice, one of the six original committee members, ran out onto the football field with a rainbow flag, and his wristbands, which you can't see, say, "I love misfits." And, you know, I mean, it just, and so what happened was, without me knowing about it, I was immediately lifted up, and the next shoe really was, is that the story stopped being about me. If it had remained about me, I probably would have, you know, been a little bit more quiet. It would have ended up being a little bit more quiet about it than it has been. But what I recognized is this isn't a story about me. This is a story about people standing up for people, people loving each other, and then stepping in and actually doing the work to love one another.
Mm-hmm. So that first weekend, you've had the meeting, you go home, you're sort of absorbing what has happened. What were your thoughts and feelings?
I was devastated. I guess that's probably an understatement, because right away I was, you know, I was sad, I was angry, I was confused, because, you know, again, I wasn't in the closet necessarily. I mean, the people who I wanted to know and trust, it's like, you know, everything in our lives. When we trust someone and we love someone, we let them know who we are. And so that's who I had been, unapologetically. And so I was very sad. On the Monday after, I was placed on administrative leave. So the next morning, I had videos from people who were sending them to me of literally hundreds of people coming through my office, filing in a line, laying bouquets of flowers on my desk, and cards, and notes, and posters, and praying in my office for me and with me, and you know, and it really, the path changed very quickly because, you know, of how I was lifted up in that way.
So all of a sudden, you go from what we might call a normal life to this very public role.
Yeah.
Lots of media that want to talk to you, lots of organizations that want you to speak. Run through some of the appearances you've made and in the media and some of the groups you've been able to speak to.
Yeah. The blessings really truly have been overwhelming. I mean, when we talk about, you know, windows closing and doors opening and all of these, I mean, that is literally the understatement of the century regarding this case. And so, you know, within 2 weeks, Ellen DeGeneres' show contacted me and asked me to come on the show to tell my story. And unbeknownst to me, she had also invited the students of Shelley's Voice to come out too. So if you ever have an opportunity, or if you've watched it, like, the shock on my face when she said, let's bring them out, is genuine. And so that probably is the one that's been, you know, the one that's been on TV the most. But we've been in the New York Times. I recently did an article interview with the Washington Post at the Supreme Court arguments. We've been on CNN, NBC News, New Ways Ministry, The Advocate, Out, Ari Getty Foundation. I mean, like, it is national, and it's crazy. We were the grand marshals for the Pride Parade. I actually spoke as the keynote speaker for the Women's March this year, and so, like, yeah, I know.
Can you
so if you
imagine,
feel like you've seen me a little bit too much on TV, I hear you.
Can you imagine? What was the coolest thing about being on the Ellen show?
That I don't remember anything. I genuinely, the three things that I remember about the Ellen show is that she smells delicious. She has the bluest eyes I've ever seen in my life, and the biggest watch I've ever seen in my life. And that's pretty much what I remember. But from everything that everybody tells me, you know, it was amazing. But the way that they treated us when we were there, Ellen is a very, very genuine person, and really that care that she has that you see on the show is real. She's faced a little bit of questionable media with, you know, some of her stances on, you know, sitting with people that she didn't agree with at a sporting event.
Not everybody knows what you're alluding to. She sat in the same sports box with George W. Bush, mm-hmm. and got criticized for that.
Yeah. And so, but they were so genuine with us. I mean, they were so kind. You know, with the kids, they brought their parents out. You know, they talked to us. They were really very cool people.
So, in an aside, what do you think about her sitting there with George W. Bush?
So, I can understand why people are upset. What I have learned in my faith journey, and I read Brené Brown probably more than anyone. If there's ever a book that I would recommend you read, and it's Braving the Wilderness by Brené Brown. And I read it all before this happened, and I'm so grateful that I did. You know, those God things that happen that you're just like, oh, that's, you know. But one of the things that she talks about is building relationships with people. And one of the things that I've talked to, you know, the youth in particular about is my desire to be kind and compassionate to one another. And I think that, you know, one of the things that I say to them, I'm pointing to them because they're here. one of the things that we talk about all the time is that we can't forget that we are not in this to change minds. We are in this to change hearts, and that's way different. Because changing minds is, you know, coming to the table with the intent of changing someone's, you know, of what they've learned and what they believe. And as soon as someone comes to the table to try to, and I know their intent is to change my mind, we shut down, right? Instead, what we need to do, or what I feel like is important, what Brené Brown feels like is important as well, is to build relationship. And that requires us to be listeners first. That requires us to come to the table to be open to hear what other people have to say and to learn and grow from them. And that when we do that, we build relationship and we turn and change hearts, which isn't up to us. That's up to God, right? And then eventually sometimes it happens where, you know, their perspective of things changes just because you sit on the other side with them. And, like, really, I mean, like, we can't be so arrogant to think that what we believe is right. You know, sometimes our path is, you know, is different than someone else's. And I'm not suggesting that we should, you know, sit down with someone who hurts us over and over, who is, you know, who is intolerant or has no motivation to have any kind of, you know, coming to the table together. But in terms of the Ellen DeGeneres and George Bush, I mean, I'm sure that he got just as many people who were criticizing him for sitting with her as she did for sitting with him. Who's right? You know?
Yeah, it's important that we talk.
Right.
It's important that we talk. So here you are in life. What do you see coming of the next few years? What's your sense of direction and calling in life right now?
Well, my calling has always been, as I said, to be an advocate. That will never change. That is innate. That is something that I was, you know, born to do. I was not born to do it on this scale, I promise you. But I'm growing more comfortable in it because what I'm recognizing is the importance of holding people up. And there are people that don't have a voice, can't have a voice, you know, I don't want to, like, spotlight anybody, but if you've watched the news, there were two other people from Roncalli that were fired with me. Another guidance counselor who also is married and in a had been at Roncalli for 39 years and in a relationship for way longer than me. And a social worker of ours who is, you know, a straight cis female who all she did was stand up for us and do her job to protect these students and their mission. And they both were fired too. And they're here today because we lift each other up, you know? And so I didn't go through this alone, which was, you know, which was wonderful. But what I recognized in all of this is the importance of finding people in our lives that hold us up. Jeff and I talked, you know, I for years, my wife and I off and on came to Life Journey before it was MCC then, but before we had Sophie and you know, in transparency here, we stopped coming here when Sophie was born because it wasn't diverse enough for me, ironically. You know, I'd grown up in a Catholic church. There weren't a lot of kids around now, which, I mean, like, it is the most beautiful thing to see that diversity in this congregation. Because to me, this is the epitome of, this is what heaven looks like in my eyes, right? Yeah. And so April before all of this happened, I had made a conscious decision that I was going to come back here and celebrate here regularly. And, you know, and anybody who grew up Catholic or Lutheran or Episcopalian, really, you know, and not just that, but those are the primary religions that I know off the top of my head that are kind of like Catholicism. When you walk into this congregation and you've had that experience, this is way different, right? In a very, very good way. But when you sit down, you know, I remember, you know, sitting towards the back, and what I recognized is there's a lot of singing. Thank you, Jason. Right? But a lot of verses, and, you know, which now I recognize is one of my favorite things about being here. And, you know, and the other thing that I recognize is, you know, people have their arms around each other. People are holding each other. People are, you know, standing up and dancing and celebrating. People are witnessing out loud. And, you know, and I remember sitting in the back thinking, yeah, that's a lot, you know? And then as I kept coming, because I swear to you, like Jeff's sermons, I mean, like if I didn't walk out of here 100 times in tears just because he had, you know, touched my heart so much, what I recognized after coming for a while is that I became really envious. And I was like, why hasn't the Spirit touched me in this way that I've never wanted to just shout out, you know, amen. I mean, like clapping in a Catholic church is like, you know, especially clapping after songs like, hey, good job, Jason. And what I grew to love about this place is that, you know, we tease, you know, Vicky, you know, my dad even said on the way out, he goes, God, you have a fan club here, right? I do have a fan club here. And this isn't, it's not about my story. It's not about being a gay counselor who got fired. It's not about being on the Ellen Show or the news or whatever. It's about people lifting each other up so that they feel love, period. And I shared with Jeff too. I'm like, and here's the perfect example of it. I might have jinxed us between services, but I'm like, did any of you go to the opening of the bathroom and see how excited everybody was last week? I mean, that is a fan club, right? I mean, like, woo, bathrooms, you know? But it's because we love each other, and we want to see each other happy, and we want to lift each other up. And I don't know that I've ever been in a place where I've felt that week after week. Every time I walk in here, it literally is the one place that I walk in and don't feel like the world is weighing me down, honestly.
So if we ever see Shelley dancing in the aisles,
it's genuine.
We'll know the Spirit is moving, right? Right. So let's talk a little bit about how this has affected you spiritually. Mm-hmm. You gave me a cartoon to share this morning that I'll share with you all. That it's hard to read this first box. I'll read it for you. It shows God and a person, presumably Shelley, standing on the edge of a cliff. And God says, my child, are you ready for the next stage of your spiritual development? And she innocently says, yes, Heavenly Father, I'm ready.
And then in August of 2018...
kicked off the cliff. What does that mean to you?
Well, I mean, really, all joking aside, is the one thing that's missing off of this cartoon is the end of it. Is, you know, you don't get to see what happens at the end of it. And, you know, in my imagination, you know, I see myself holding up all those balloons from up, you know, and floating above it. But I mean, there's no parachute, right? There's nothing there that shows you what happens next. And this is exactly how I felt immediately until I was, there was a giant mattress at the bottom of the cliff that saved me. And so my spiritual journey really has been a God, it's just overwhelming. It's been a really fun one because although I've always considered myself a faithful person, you know, where I was in my faith journey before, and some of this is the way that I grew up, and some of it is the church that I was in, and or whatever it is that I heard, to me, my faith journey used to always be about feeling like God had a plan for us. And there's some of us that feel that way. You know, it's already a predicted plan. You know, it's already built for us. And in the Lord's Prayer, I would always concentrate on thy will be done. You have a plan, thy will be done. What I've learned, and some of it, you know, from really a sermon that Jeff gave not too long ago, but what's turned for me is that what I've recognized is that God's not walking in front of me, and he certainly isn't behind me. He's walking right beside me and with me in the journey. And now, instead of believing that there's a predestined plan, I just know that the plan changes. You know, he talked a few weeks ago about, you know, God's will. I mean, we can't control what other people do. We can't control, you know, we make mistakes. They make mistakes. And so, you know, one of the things that I talked about was it feeling like, it's a chess game, you know, I make a move and then God makes a move, you know, and then I make a move or somebody else makes a move and then God makes a move. But what I've recognized even in, you know, in praying about this talk today is that it's really not even like a chess game. It's more like a dance. You know, it's smoother than a chess game. It's like, you know, something crummy happens and then something good happens the next day. I'm not even lying. And it's, you know, and maybe I step on his toes and he doesn't stop dancing. We just move into the next, you know, and sometimes it's a salsa and sometimes it's a waltz and, you know, it just, it's been incredible for me because that since I have felt that God is walking beside me instead of fronting in front of me, I feel like I have more control. I feel like, you know, it's not something that's already happening to me and just sit back and watch it happens. I can be active in making a difference. And that's kind of, you know, what we've chosen to do.
Have you lost a lot of people in this?
Not as many as I've gained. Right. Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, people feel like they have to make decisions, and I respect that. To hear me say that I respect that. I know not everybody is on the journey that I'm on. What I've recognized, though, through a quote that, you know, someone sent me kind of just out of the blue, but what I recognized is that we're not all on the same journey, and I'm not on the same journey that I was a year and a half ago. And because people, I do believe that there were people that loved me that had to just let go so that they didn't have to be in the middle. Unfortunately, you know, people have to make decisions. Along with me today as well are some of my very, very good friends that, you know, that couldn't stay and had to leave Roncalli as well. And, you know, and a lot of the emotion that I've gone through, you know, that I've been truly working on with myself is the guilty feeling that I have. I'm okay. I'm not mad. I'm not sad. I'm moving forward. But the one emotion that overwhelms me sometimes is the guilt that all of the trauma that has been caused for other people through this. You know, although I didn't choose this, you know, my friends who walked away from their jobs that they loved, my friends who got fired from their jobs that they loved, my family who, you know, is very supportive but has to, you know, hear things and see things that people say all the time, you know, my students who were silenced. There are a lot of people who are experiencing a lot of pain through this. And although I recognize that's not my fault, I wish that I could take that away from them.
To those two individuals you mentioned who are here today who also lost their job, I just want them to know how grateful we are for their courage and their principle and how sorry we are for what happened to them.
Me too. Me too.
I believe this is the quote you're referring to. You want to read it for us and tell us what it means to you?
Sure. So I did get this out of the blue, and it was like a punch in the face, right? It says, "It is painful when God is leading you to a place where other people who have been important to you on your journey cannot follow. Do not judge them, nor judge where you have been. God was back there too and still is. Don't let your heart be arrogant now, but also don't stop walking." All right? And so when I got this quote, I really, you know, again, one of those God things, I really was in a place where I was aggravated that I had some really good friends that it really had dismissed me. Well, it was a community, but it was, you know, a few particular individuals that, you know, knew and shared dinner with us and came to our house and gave us wedding gifts and blah, 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 that just felt like they needed to walk away. And I was, you know, I was angry about it. But then I got this, and what I recognized, again, is that our journeys are all different. And, you know, and I am respectful of their decisions. I don't like them, but I respect where they are and where they felt like they had to be.
And keep going.
Yes,
and keep going. That's the end of the quote says, as we're running out of time, so as we start to wrap down, tell folks a little bit about what Shelley's Voice is and is doing.
Thanks. So Shelley's Voice is an advocacy group, a nonprofit advocacy group that the students started in my name, and now we're a full-fledged, massive board doing lots of great things. We had a rally for equality that actually Pastor Jeff blew everybody away at. I know that doesn't surprise anybody, but everybody was like, "Who was that?" And I was like, "That's my pastor. You should come with me." And then they did. And so Shelley's Voice is the mission in a nutshell is for us to figure out how to work together in a faith-based environment so that if people want to be a part of, it doesn't matter, it's not just the Catholic Church, if they want to be a part of a church, that we're going to work to fight for them so that they have a place at the table. You know, I maintain that the three safest places that a youth should feel is at their home, at their school, and at their church. And unfortunately, you know, some of these kids have experienced not getting support in any of those places or in two of the three or whatever. And so our mission is that nobody has to feel like that anymore. And, you know, and it's youth-led. We have a massive committee that includes adults, too. And we're just doing things around the community trying to bring trying to teach youth how to be activists in a responsible and respectful way.
Do you think the Catholic Church will ever change?
Yeah. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful. You know, again, I think that it's all about building a relationship, and I think that it's really hard to hate someone up close. It's sad to me that in a time and place where people need church the most in our lives is that people are actually having the door shut on them. So our work, my individual work, is that, you know, it's not just about the Catholic Church, but if someone wants to go to a Catholic church, I want them to have a seat at the table. And I feel like, you know, again, I feel like we are in a dangerous place if we ever get to a place where we feel like we are more deserving of God's love than anybody else.
If you are with Shelley's Voice and you're here today, we'd invite you to stand so we can appreciate and honor you.
Yeah. They're part of my fan club.
As we close, I would like us to jointly pray a prayer of commissioning for Shelley. I believe she's a prophet in our time. She doesn't like it when I use that word for her, but because it doesn't always end so well for prophets, right? But
well, that wasn't why until now.
Right now, as most of you know, we're studying some of the great Old Testament prophets, Jonah, Hosea, Isaiah, and next week, Jeremiah. So I think it's fitting that she's speaking in the midst of that, because this is what a modern day prophet looks like, right? This is not easy. It can be tiring, and it can be unsafe sometimes. But a prophet boldly and courageously moves forward. So let's close this sermon time with a prayer of commissioning for Shelley's continued ministry and work. And if you're comfortable, you can lift your hand toward her as a symbol of God's blessing on what she's doing. Dear God, we are so grateful for the champions among us. Ordinary people, just like in the Bible, that you pluck up out of life through circumstances, and instead of shrinking, they rise to the moment, confident of your power working in and through them. Thank you that that has been Shelley's story, and we ask that you will redouble the strength that is in her, that you will give her confidence and courage and wisdom and the right words, the right spirit to know when to be gentle and to know when to be passionate and even a little bit angry. God, let your light and your work shine through her. Continue to open and close the right doors, and may many hearts be changed because of Shelley's voice. May churches that are stubbornly resistant make progress. May cultural institutions and schools that are stuck in what they were taught be open to the voice of your Spirit calling them forward, just like Jesus did. Bless Shelley. Keep her safe. We thank you for her in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen.